It's really interesting to see how these companies are approaching Chicago, right?
She was telling me she's really trying to understand how the tech ecosystem here works.
What's interesting about the baby boomers is that they've never met a debt they didn't like.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
So welcome to Monday afternoon, everyone. Steve Bertrand here on the Business Lunch, the Wintrust Business Lunch. You heard Elise Klink's voice there. We'll talk to her a little bit later about millennials and the way they manage their money. She mentioned baby boomers retiring and chasing their grandkids all over the country. That is the subject of a study from Myers Research, and Allie Wolf conducted that. She'll join us a little bit later in the program. We start, though, you know, as a guy who covers news a lot, I talk to a lot of politicians, a lot of people who I expect one day will be in prison. I don't often talk to someone who already has been there, but on a phone line now is Richard Bronson, the founder and CEO of 70 Million Jobs. Richard, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks so much for having me, Steve.
All right, so tell me, let's start with your story first. You spent 2 years in prison, financial crimes, right?
Yeah, I used to work on Wall Street, and that may already tell you all you need to know. But I did very well there, and at one point I was actually a partner in the infamous Wolf of Wall Street firm from the movie. I left there to start my own business, and I grew it into a very large financial services company. But unfortunately, some of my behavior was outside of the law. And despite having paid everybody back, I was rightfully punished, and I served a 2-year prison sentence as a result.
When did you get out, Richard?
2005.
Okay. You write in, on your website that you actually were a little bit relieved to go to prison. Explain that for me.
Yeah, I never felt like I was put on this earth to do harm. And all the time that I was doing wrong, I knew it was wrong, and I felt very guilty about it. I really couldn't even enjoy the fruits of my illicit behavior. But that's no excuse at all.
Right.
I'm ashamed and deeply regretful for what I did. And I really very much was eager to put it behind me and somehow atone for, you know, the wrong that I had done. And going to prison, I hoped, would give me some of that closure.
All right, so here we are. You're out of prison. We are in a very hot jobs market. We certainly have a labor pool when it comes to former prisoners. The United States has the largest prison population in the world. And you've decided to marry these two up. Tell me about 70 Million Jobs.
I'd love to. Thank you. There are two big problems that we're addressing. On the one side, there are about 70 million Americans, or 1 in 3 adults, believe it or not, that have some kind of record. And their record gives them a stigma that they carry with them for the rest of their life and makes it very, very hard, if not impossible, for them to find a job. And finding a job, while it's important to anybody to pay the rent and put food on the table, folks with a record, if they don't get a job quickly,
right,
the chances are high that they will end up being rearrested.
Well, we want these people out. We want them to be rehabilitated to start their life over. But more often than not, we're not willing to give them a job that will allow them to do that.
Yeah. I mean, what do we expect is going to happen?
Right.
If you come out of prison with the best of intentions, you know, if you have a family, you have to feed them. And even if you don't, ultimately, you have to earn money some way. And unfortunately, you know, these guys come out of prison and their friends are still on the street, very often making a lot of money doing the kind of things that got them into trouble in the first place.
All right, so that's the prisoner side. That's the prisoner side. Tell me about the job side, the employer side.
Well, right now, with historic low unemployment, large corporate America is facing an acute recruiting challenge. There's almost 8 million unfilled jobs right now, mostly at the lower end of the wage scale. So I figured, why can't we put these two problems next to each other and solve them simultaneously?
And how have you been doing? Do you have people signing up?
Yeah, we have millions of job seekers who have come to us looking for help. And at the same time, corporate America, which, as I say, is often desperate to fill positions, now have the opportunity to access this vast pool of labor.
And
the incredible thing is that these folks actually do very well on the job. You know, so it's, truly, it's, this is win-win.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you there, but it's one of those things where, you know, because of this hot job market, these people are getting a break, and the companies are going to benefit, too. I mean, this, it's a nice PR thing, and I have seen some statistics in, on your website that you, and certainly it's not universal, but you say that ex-cons often turn out to be very good employees.
Yeah, they are very good employees because unlike people without records, they don't have many options. So if they get themselves in a reasonably good situation, they're not about to jeopardize it because they know that on the outside there may not be something awaiting them. So they really work hard. They stick around longer on average than people without records. And inevitably, companies tell us how thrilled they are with having hired them.
But those are the success stories. There have got to be failure stories as well, right? I mean, there must be people who come out who can't stay clean to get hired and cause trouble as well.
It happens much less than you would expect,
yeah,
and the risk is way overblown. The truth is that someone with a job will almost never, ever get rearrested. It's that clear cut. Employment is the silver bullet.
And who are the employers that you're working with? Are you working with the big names, mom and pop shops, or who are the employers here?
We generally target the largest companies because they're the one who have the largest number of jobs. These are companies that are industrial companies, manufacturing, construction, food service, retail. They have an acute need for people. And what I tell our job seekers all the time is get your foot in the door. And because there's so much turnover right now, you stick around and do a good job. You can be the manager in a month. We've seen that happen time and again.
How many jobs have you placed?
Thousands.
Yeah? And you've been up and running since when?
It's been less than 2 years.
Okay.
So we're very, very excited by the response that we've gotten. We have the support of many large companies who are thrilled to be involved. But the real heroes are our job seekers because once they get in there, boy, do they do a great job.
You know, this is the sort of work that you might expect from a nonprofit, a charity to do. This company, 70 Million Jobs, is a for-profit endeavor. That'd be good for you. You're out of prison. You lost your money. Need to make some money back. How do you get a check out of this? How does that work?
Companies pay us one way or another to access our large pool of talent. We have a job board, and they place ads, and they pay for them, or we have a staffing business. There are different models that are in place. But we believe that the idea of a company that's doing good and doing well at the same time really represents the future of business.
Yeah,
it really works very, very well.
Have you seen companies where they've been able to use leverage or leverage this story about how they're helping people and then turn that into PR for them as well?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's a benefit because they're sending a message to the communities and towns in which they do business that they are good corporate citizens and they're there to give second chances for the people who really deserve them and need one. It sends a message to other businesses, too, that this really does work and it's a terrific solution for business.
Well, Richard Bronson, you've shown that you certainly deserved a second chance and you're making the best of it. The name of the company is 70 Million Jobs. I appreciate you joining us today. I wish you great success in the future.
Thanks so much, Steve. Glad I could be on with you today.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Okay, remember the days of the grandparents retiring away from their grandkids, maybe moving to Florida or Arizona, things like that? It's changed in recent years. Allie Wolf knows that. She is with Myers Research, and they've come up with what they call the Myers Baby Chaser Index. She joins us on a phone line now. Allie, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so tell me about this, right? Grandparents, baby boomers now, are chasing their kids.
They are, and this all came about because we survey Americans across the country, and we found in our data that 25% of baby boomers were planning on retiring near their grandkids. And so we call that baby chasers, and we were like, wow, that's higher than we thought it would be.
It's much higher than I thought. I mean, so one in four, first of all, a lot of retirees aren't going to relocate. So of those who are, or all of them, I guess, 25% are going to follow their kids. That just surprises me. What do you think has changed over the past couple of decades to make that so?
Well, and it's interesting, too, because they don't care about, it doesn't have to be, well, if I live in Chicago, I'll follow my kids as long as they're in Illinois. It's that I'm okay, I'll move somewhere else, I'll go to another state if I need to. But to answer your question, I honestly think it's the digital age. I think we've become so consumed with our devices and we spend so much of our time just in front of screens that there's actually this pull to go back towards human interaction, especially with people that we love and care about.
I know you're not a sociologist, but I'd read a study not too long ago that said retirees are actually happier when they retire with their friends rather than with their families. that might be a little out of your area of expertise, but what do you make of that?
Well, and I think that's why we haven't seen such a baby-chasing focus for a lot of the past 50 years, is there were all of these new active adult communities where you could go into a Dell Web and you could be part of the knitting organization, you can be part of the golf club organization, or the golf cart, yeah.
Sure.
And so I think there is validity to just really enjoying all of these different things that maybe you put on hold your whole life to raise a family. But I also just think fundamentally there are some people that say family is their number one most important thing, and you couldn't make them happier unless they were next to their grandbabies.
So in the Myers Baby Chaser Index, the cities that are in the top 10, by and large, are cities that people would retire to anyway. Charlotte, Austin, Raleigh, Nashville, Dallas, and then you get to Denver, Columbus. I'm not sure I understand Columbus. Then Orlando, Las Vegas, Seattle. Chicago didn't make your list, Allie.
Chicago didn't, and I honestly don't even know if I want to tell you where Chicago fell.
Where was it? Tell me.
Oh, geez.
Do you know?
Chicago was, yeah, it was dead last.
Oh, no, really?
Yes, but it's because I pulled the data because I was like, I don't want to tell them this because it's not as bad as it sounds. This index is looking, it's overlaying where you're seeing the most population growth for millennials and for boomers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you've seen the stats that show there's negative net migration in Chicago, meaning more people are leaving than coming in. So that doesn't mean there aren't baby chasers in Chicago, and that doesn't mean Chicago can't still be successful. It just means it will never make my list because I need to see high population growth markets.
Well, and the fact is, as I sort of alluded to before, some of these highest-ranked cities are retirement destinations anyway. I mean, you wouldn't maybe expect grandparents to follow their kids to Billings, Montana, or something like that, more likely to Charlotte, North Carolina.
I did think, though, because Charlotte, or you said Columbus was on the list. I found that interesting as well. And same with Seattle and same with Denver. So it's not all the temperate climate markets that you would expect. But yes, you are seeing a bit more towards the better weather states, the smile states.
Florida, a magnet for retirees, has not gained as much traction in this index, right? I mean, we see Orlando there. But is that because millennials aren't moving there, so boomers aren't going to chase them?
Well, I think it's really interesting when you look at Orlando because they are going to have to fight for the next 10 years to get over the mindset of millennials that if I go to Orlando, I have to work in tourism.
Mm.
And it's interesting because Orlando is, if you've looked over the past 5 years, one of the markets with the most high-income job growth. But that's not getting communicated, I don't think, well enough. So, yes, I don't think we're seeing as many millennials move there, at least right now. But you still have your fair share of boomers that are heading to Florida, and especially to Orlando.
All right. Myers Research looks at real estate. So, essentially, this is a real estate study. What should the real estate business take out of these numbers?
Well, as it relates to Chicago, you have to look at there's still baby chasers in Chicago, and you have to look at where are they coming from. Because for the real estate industry, they need to consider, are people going to have equity? What size home are they going to want? If they're going to follow their grandkids, should we include a spare bedroom when maybe we wouldn't have because we want to make sure that there's enough room for the little one to come and visit and to enjoy some outdoor space? There's a lot of implications in terms of housing design or different products that would resonate with baby chasers.
Allie Wolf is with Myers Research. She joins us from California. Allie, my daughter moved out there just a year ago, so who knows? Maybe we'll be neighbors one day.
I think it's time for you to go chase her.
Thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Thanks, Don Klepp and Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN on this beautiful Monday afternoon in the city of Chicago. We're in the WGN studios looking down on the Chicago River, the boat traffic going up and down the river, a lot of tourists in town. You know, I think we've had on the program before David Kalt. He's the guy behind Reverb.com. They, as I recall, they sell used musical equipment. So you buy a guitar, you think you're going to learn how to play guitar, as I did not too long ago. You realize it's gathering dust, and then you can sell it on Reverb. I think that's how it works. Anyway, Etsy has just announced that they are buying Reverb for, it's a garage sale, right? For $275 million. We'll talk to Amy Guth about that a little bit later. That's the subject, or one of the subjects, on the Daily Gist podcast today. But on the phone line now is Elise Glink, the brains behind bestmoneymoves.com and thinkglink.com as well, as we take a look at personal savings, retirement plans, and things like that. Elise, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Nice to be here, Steve.
Okay, so we're getting older and older and more retired. What's the statistic? There was just a study I saw that said nearly a quarter of Americans say they never plan to retire. About one in five people 65 and older are currently working or actively looking for a job. That was a number out of last month. So does that mean retirement is going away? What's up with that?
I think people wish it wouldn't go away, but the reality of paying for health care post-retirement is so frightening to people, not to mention some of the other rising costs like housing and some of the other things that you do, that I think people have realized that they just simply don't have enough money, and so they're looking to continue to work.
Is this because the pension systems and things like that have gone away, or, I mean, why is it that our parents could retire more easily than, or maybe our grandparents than our parents?
Well, there's a whole lot of reasons. First, you're right. Pensions have by and large gone away. We're still seeing them in for teachers, and we see them for some public workers. But a whole lot of people in the private sector who used to have pensions don't have them anymore. Beyond that, you're also seeing people who just the amount of money that they earn and the buying power of it basically hasn't changed in almost five decades. I mean, we're seeing purchasing power basically stay the same, where all sorts of other costs have gone up significantly. And that has also really cost people some of their retirement years.
You know, and I bring this up a lot, and I don't mean to sound like a broken record, but I just have this concern as, you know, more, we're able to do more and more things with our money, but we also have a greater and greater responsibility to handle our money and to prepare for retirement, things that we didn't have to do before. And I just think that's part of it here, that, you know, people haven't had the wherewithal money-wise or investment knowledge-wise to get set on their own. In the past, your job took care of that.
It did. And, you know, today we call this the world of financial wellness, which is exactly the world I live in with my company, Best Money Moves, where we're trying to help employers help employees with this idea that they have to prepare for not just their lives as a part of this company for however long it lasts, but their lives as employees from entry to retirement and what it means to think about budgeting and saving and doing all of these things. And for a lot of people who are, you know, sort of younger millennials and even Gen Z, they're coming into a very different workforce with a huge amount of debt that our parents didn't even have. And that debt is student loan debt, it's credit card debt. And so they have an even tougher time with this long term of retirement. The good news, of course, is they're going to all live to be 100 or more. They've got a lot of years to fix this.
Well, it's interesting because I was thinking maybe the younger generations also are coming in, though, with a different mindset in that they know they're going to be responsible for their own retirement. So they might be better equipped to prepare for it.
You know, it's interesting. They might be. I think, like everybody else.
Well, no, Elise, you're the expert. I'm not. You know, not me.
Well, you know, there's a lot of different ways to think about it. If you're coming out of college today and you don't have debt, and there are, you know, maybe a quarter of all college graduates who don't have some form of debt coming out of school, you know, you're in a pretty good place. You've got a lot of years ahead of you. You're thinking about, you know, what you're going to do to get into the workforce and get your life started, your career going, and how that money is going to flow back into you. If you're coming out with a boatload of student debt, anywhere from $30,000 to $200,000 worth, your perspective is going to be a lot different, right, especially based on the job you can get.
You know, I was reading last week, I don't know if this came up on the show or not, but and maybe it would have been with you at least, but younger workers who have resentment toward older workers who are staying in the workplace. The idea is that they are thwarting sort of the younger workers' progress. The other side of it is that the more people who are working, the more paychecks that are going out, the better the economy is. The more people have money to spend. Sort that out for me.
Sure. So employers, you know, companies would really like older workers who typically are a bigger line item for them. They're more expensive. They use more expensive health care. There's others, they've been there a long time. There's more contribution to a 401k. There's no secret that they like to have a ready turnover of workers, but you can't get rid of somebody just because they're older and they cost you more money. Ideally, they're also bringing huge value to the organization. I think younger people are worried that they don't move up quickly enough, but the truth is that, you know, for millennials, there's a huge expectation that they will be promoted on a very regular basis, like every 6 months or every year or every 2 years. And they don't, you know, especially at the beginning of their careers, they're looking for those immediate jumps because those typically translate into, you know, hard money that comes right into them, into their bank account. So they're looking for those big jumps early on. And seniors want to stay now, and this is the whole point of that study, that a quarter of all Americans are thinking maybe they can't afford to retire, and they are sticking around a little bit longer. Now, when we have super low unemployment like we do now, that's a good thing because trying to find even more workers than companies are already looking for would be hard. But if and when the economy slows down, it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out for employers, you know, where they have higher cost employees or lower cost employees and what they choose to do.
We talk a lot about millennials and their demands, what they expect from their employers. But I was reading at bestmoneymoves.com a story about a survey of millennials. I think it was from Bank of America. Three quarters of respondents said that they think they know their generation overspends compared to other generations. That's their view, sort of a maybe a little guilt trip there, but the article goes on to say that it's not really true. Millennials are sort of in keeping with other generations as well.
They are, but again, the purchasing power that they have today with the dollars that they earn is far less than it was. You know, they basically haven't had a raise in 40 years, and so they're coming into a much more expensive lifestyle with lifestyle choices, and of course, they've got bigger debt issues, and so their money seems to not stretch as far as prior generations' money did at the same generation age. And the same thing is true in terms of their total amount of savings. When you look at what baby boomers had when they were 23, 24, 25, or Gen X and what they had, and now you look at millennials and you're looking at Gen Z, which is just hitting 2021, you realize that the amount of wealth they have today and the amount of debt that they have is far different from their parents' or even grandparents' generation was at the same age. And so they think they're doing okay, and we look to them and we say, wow, they've got a big, heavy load. And I think this is one of the reasons that companies are so aware now that financial stress is an issue with performance, with retention, with turnover, with healthcare costs and outcomes, and why so many companies are now focused on trying to dial down elements of this financial stress, whether it's student loan debt or it's managing money issues or it's simply healthcare costs and outcomes. They're trying to find ways to move those levers to reduce stress.
For goodness sakes, it seems to me like Best Money Moves would be a way to do that.
It would be a nice way for them to do it, and I encourage everybody to call in, and we'll be happy to show them how we work.
Elise Glink, bestmoneymoves.com. Thanks for joining us today.
It's a pleasure, Steve. Thank you.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. As the marijuana market in Illinois gears up, companies are gaining momentum for January 1st, 2020. But here's one of the questions to consider. Will there be a specific neighborhood or area that has a high concentration of dispensaries? Cresco Labs is one of the big boys in town, and they're taking over the space that was the bar, John Barleycorn, less than a block away from Wrigley Field. Obviously, Wrigleyville is a hotbed for drinking, but could a higher purpose be making its way in? All right, no more high jokes. Fine. WeWork continues to move into Chicago, but as they gobble up open space, building owners are starting to question, are they good for the building? It stems from the durability of co-working because it's a model that's never experienced an economic downturn. Would the small companies using these spaces survive? What would that mean for the space? Are these companies even preparing for situations like that? WeWork currently takes up the most commercial real estate space in the city of Chicago. So if they have to start giving up spaces because they can't afford it, that can single-handedly influence the CRE market here in the city. This might be one of those things we have to learn the hard way. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
It's 12:51. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. All right, Amy Guth is in the studio. She's the host of The Daily Gist, the podcast from Crane Chicago Business. You can check it out here at WGNradio.com. Amy, it's just a garage sale, man. It's just an online garage sale. It's like Etsy, right? And Reverb.com is sold itself to Etsy for $275 million. Word out today. Wow.
I mean, it's a big piece of news. It's interesting because I didn't really think of these two things as matching and being a good partnership. But then once I saw this story, I thought, oh, actually, that makes perfect sense. And obviously, Etsy thought so, too.
Now, I've talked to a lot of people here, but I'm pretty sure David Kalt I've had on from Reverb.
I'm sure that you have. He's done a lot of other things. Options Express, he sold that for $1 billion in 2011.
Wow.
So, you know, this guy is he's on a pretty good streak. We need to, like, pat his shoulder for good luck or something.
But he had an idea where he resells, right? Tell me.
Yeah, so Reverb is reselling musical instruments. So he was using things like Craigslist and eBay to buy and sell used guitars and stuff like that, and just not feeling like it totally met his needs. So he started Reverb. And, you know, Etsy feels like this is absolutely in the spirit of the human, business to business model.
Right.
And keeping it small, keeping it local, keeping it vendor to vendor.
Because Etsy sells those ceramics that I make in my basement, right?
You do a really good job.
Thank
with those,
you.
Bertrand.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to collect all six.
It's all in the painting.
That's right. But, this is Renji. So this guy, David Kalt, 6 years ago, he grew this business with $36 million. He's gotten a lot of investment for some big names,
right.
Both co-founders of Groupon. He has one of the co-founders from PayPal. Some big names from Silicon Valley have backed this company. So this guy's, I think he's in pretty good standing with the startup industry right
and
now.
He also, you know, a lot of times when people start a business and they stay with it, they sell it, they want to keep running it, right? Because it's kind of their baby. I think he sort of betrays himself here, as he's a guy who starts businesses and sells them.
Yeah.
He gets more, it looks like.
Yeah,
he
it
gets
seems
more,
that way.
He
yeah.
gets more rush out of building something and selling it, because he said he's not going to stick around with this company.
Look, if someone offered me $275 million.
He's already got $1 billion, though.
Well, that's true.
Right.
Like, I already have $1 billion. I was going to say, I'd be like, sure, okay. But
if I have $1 billion, I'm not going to worry about selling my used guitars.
Right. That's a good point.
And the Daily Gist today.
It is. Also today, I talked with a guy named Siki Ballard, who is CEO of Good Tree Capital, who is a really, really interesting person. It is small business funding and lending, specifically focusing on the cannabis industry.
Oh, really?
And he's a really smart guy. He has a really impressive resume. He's worked with a lot of companies like Amazon and Procter & Gamble and the Peace Corps. He's done all this interesting stuff, and he's kind of brought that all together in this company.
Okay, but tell me about that. What sort of small business opportunities are there? Because I'm thinking it's going to be pretty tightly regulated.
Yeah, it
is. So you're going to have to be of some size just to be involved at all.
Well, and that's kind of his whole mission, is that the bigger conversation he's having is about how people access capital and can we all access it equally, and how as marijuana, recreational marijuana anyway, that legalization of it rolls out in January.
Don't say rolls out.
Oh, okay, you're right. I didn't even mean the pun, but you're exactly right.
It's going to be.
You have pot on the brain, Bertrand.
It's going to be. They're going to be so. Between
they,
now
they
and January 1st.
It's going to happen in January. That's right.
Yeah.
So he's really looking at that and kind of some of that, some of the state sponsored programs that could help people have access to entrepreneurship opportunities in the cannabis industry who otherwise may not be able to. So it was a really interesting conversation that I had with him earlier today.
What else you got coming up on the program?
Well, it's all Reverb. It's all about reselling guitars, really. No, we're taking a look at Boeing and all the big headlines.
I bought a guitar a few years ago because I was going to do it. I should be on Reverb because I think it's in my closet somewhere. You know, it's like I'm going to learn to play the guitar.
What's the one song you wanted to learn how to play?
I used to be funny. You asked that when I was 9, I could play "Smoke on the Water."
Nice.
Just dun dun, because it was so easy. And then when we went to Switzerland, I did not know this until I got back. Really, we stayed in the hotel in Montreux. We all went down to Montreux. Remember the lyric? Where Deep Purple was there to record an album. Frank Zappa had a concert. They burned down the casino. And so they're staying in the hotel that we stayed in and wrote "Smoke on the Water."
I feel like the song is calling you, Bertrand.
It's a full circle.
Before you go to Reverb, I feel like you do need to learn how to play the song, and we need video proof.
Forget the Lion King. That's the circle of life. All right, we'll check it out. The Daily Gist a little bit later. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks so much.